Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 358, titled Mind Jihad, Part 6, Islamofascism and the Wahhabi Lobby. We're going to be taking a look at the influence of economics, in particular petroleum economics, and power politics, and not only American public opinion, but public opinion around the world. By the way, when I talk about Islamofascism, I don't want to be misunderstood, as I've said many times before, as characterizing Islam as fascist. That is not the case. But there is a very powerful element within Islam that is fascist, that is grouped around the Wahhabi sect, which in turn is based in Saudi Arabia, and in part due to the distorting effect not only on the world economy, but also on the economy and the religious aspects of the Middle East of petroleum wealth. Wahhabism has come to be elevated to a huge position. That also is due to the fact that both Mecca and Medina are in Saudi Arabia, but in turn, Wahhabism, or as some observers have classified it, Islamofascism, is a very, very powerful element, not only within the United States proper, but within the rest of the world. Not only is the influence there oil wealth per se, but also some of the economic ties connected with that, in particular American and other corporations that have very lucrative contracts of one type or another with Saudi Arabia and with other Middle Eastern oil-producing countries. And in turn, as the price of petroleum has gone up, in particular with the increase in oil prices in the 1970s, which in turn resulted in a global recession, capital flowing to the Middle East has increased enormously, and in turn, many countries, including and especially the United States, have actively courted many of the benefactors of that tremendous wealth to invest in American industries. When Crown Prince Abdullah, the heir apparent in Saudi Arabia, showed up down in Crawford, Texas to take Crown Prince George Walker bin Talal Abdulaziz in hand, one should note that, as a number of papers did record, Saudi Arabia alone has hundreds of billions of dollars in assets invested in the United States. And in addition to the business relationships proper, a great many academic fellowships, a great many nonprofit organizations, which in turn have a huge effect on academia and public opinion, have been sponsored by oil wealth, and the poorer people have gotten, then the more significant that wealth has become. So the Wahhabi lobby and American public opinion will be a major focal point of this broadcast. And again, when I talk about Islamofascism, that is an Islamic form of fascism. I don't want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist. By the way, this is being recorded on May 6th of 2002. The articles, the programs that I've done over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. I will give you more information about that later in the program. They can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And in particular, on the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website, on which 2 half-hour segments can be heard each week, one can view long, detailed descriptions of the For the Record programs and the programs that I've done about September 11th, beginning with For the Record 325, have been reformatted to make them easier to read. These descriptions are detailed and annotated, and they are absolutely free. Look in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. There are also links within the For the Record section to 2 websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. These websites have virtually the entire For the Record series available for either download or streaming on Real Audio. More about that later in the program. Now, we're going to be taking a look, among other things, at the milieu of Altaqua. As we saw in, for the record, 356 and 357, there are the most profound connections between not only the milieu of Al-Qaeda, but the milieu of Altaqua, and very, very powerful interests, not only a very, very strong foundation within the Borman organization that I've spoken about, but there are profound connections between the Republican Party and the Bush administration and the Altaqua slash Al-Qaeda slash Wahhabi lobby milieu that I have been speaking about for the last couple of weeks in particular, and that I'll be continuing with discussion about which I will be continuing with discussion about which this evening, improperly conjugated. One wants to note in particular the profound links between Altaqua and the Republican Party and some overlapping and very complex nonprofit organizations and Islamic charities and mutual funds, which are overlapping in terms of economic participation. They have interlocking directorates, and many of them also are geographically, physically located next to one another, and a lot of them do their financial transactions through some of the tax havens, such as the Channel Islands, the Cayman Islands, and the Isle of Man. In turn, many of those organizations, not only connected to terrorism but Islamo-fascist in nature, have to a large extent usurped or inherited the role of mouthpieces and opinion makers for the Islamic community, at least insofar as it has been represented in the United States. These organizations, as we looked at in the last 2 weeks, have strong connections to the Republican Party, to its ethnic outreach organization in particular, and to the Bush administration as well. They also have very strong connections to the Third Reich, the Underground Reich, as I have called it. And in turn, the concept of the Earth Island has been exploited by the Underground Reich. That is a huge landmass stretching from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way on across Europe, the former Soviet Union embracing China, India, the Middle East. And that huge landmass and the control thereof was seen by the Third Reich as the key to world domination. They called it the Earth Island. Across the middle of it is a huge swatch of Muslim population, or a huge group of Islamic peoples, and also overlapping those Islamic peoples is most of the world's petroleum reserves. So controlling that and controlling the Islamic peoples of the world, Arabs in particular, was seen as the key by the Third Reich's geopoliticians to world domination. That is true in the post-war period. We're going to be taking a look at some of the propaganda aspects right now. Reviewing an element that we looked at in the San Francisco Chronicle, this appeared in the Chronicle on March 12th of 2002. On page A12, we find the following article by Jay Bushinsky of the Chronicle Foreign Service, headlined "Swiss Probe Anti-U.S. Neo-Nazi," subtitled "Suspected Financial Ties to Al-Qaeda." This deals with, among others, Ahmed Huber of Altaqua slash NADA Management. It's Dateline Bern, Switzerland, and Ahmed Huber was quoted in an interview by the Chronicle as follows, quote, "The U.S. is the ally of 15 million Jews against 1.3 billion Muslims. It is allied with 5 million Israelis against 200 million Arabs," he said, again quoting, "We will bring down the Israel lobby and change foreign policy. We'll do it in America. When it happens, you'll understand." Unquote. And we're going to be taking a look at how the Wahhabi lobby, again, with very, very profound connections to corporate America, with very profound connections to corporations around the world. The Kuwaiti Investment Authority alone owns 7%, a minority controlling interest in Daimler Chrysler. The 7%, by the way, is a lot in a major corporation. You sell that stock, you drive down the stock, you can control a corporation even with a minor interest. Kuwait is a tiny country, but very powerful because of the oil wealth. By way of looking at the Islamo-fascist Wahhabi lobby usurping not only of elements of public opinion, but in particular something that has been noted by many Muslim critics, the way in which the distortion of Islamo-fascism slash Wahhabism has enabled, and that to a certain extent at least, to a large extent, the result of petroleum wealth and geopolitics, the extent to which that has enabled many of these Islamo-fascist elements, including, as we shall see, elements connected to terrorism and to the Muslim Brotherhood, and as we have seen, connected to the underground Reich through the Al-Taqwa/Nada management milieu, and to the GOP, these elements have to a large extent usurped what is being viewed as Islamic public opinion, in turn through some of the global mass media that have been accessed in the Islamic and Arab worlds. They have had a relatively incendiary effect in that part of the world as well. Following articles from the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, May 1st of 2002, an article by Glenn R. Simpson headlined, U.S. charges Islamic group head lied under oath on terror probe. And this concerns an organization called Benevolence International. This particular Islamic charity, like many other Islamic charities, although it does apparently serve charitable functions and has apparently duped many well-meaning Muslims into contributing to it as a result, it also has been abused as a front for terrorism and for Al-Qaeda in particular. This is Dateline Washington. It reads in part as follows. Providing a new window into the government's probe of the use of charitable groups to finance terrorism, the Justice Department filed perjury charges against a Chicago-area Islamic welfare group and its head, alleging he lied under oath in March when he denied involvement in terrorism. The 35-page Federal Bureau of Investigation statement of allegations, which grew from a Little Watch civil case, is among the most detailed filings the U.S. government has made against suspected Al-Qaeda associates in this country and provides substantial new information about the investigation of Islamic terrorism following the September 11th attacks. Skipping down. Benevolence International was founded in the 1980s by Sheikh Abdul Abdul Battarji, a wealthy Saudi whom the FBI identifies as a bin Laden associate and a supporter of Islamic rebels in Afghanistan. Mr. Arnaut, A-R-N-A-O-U-T, that's Enam Arnaut, and I'm not sure about the pronunciation, capital E-N-A-A-M, capital A-R-N-A-O-U-T. Mr. Arnaut later became head of the group, and in the early 1990s, several Al-Qaeda members came to hold positions in BIF. One witness said, BIF was used in the early 1990s by Osama bin Laden as a means to transfer money to bank accounts generally held by purported relief organizations in countries where Al-Qaeda members or associates were conducting operations, unquote. Another witness claimed Mr. Arnaut was, quote, an administrator, unquote, for Mr. bin Laden in the 1980s during the Afghan-Soviet conflict. Mr. Arnaut was linked to Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, the radical Islamic warlord with alleged ties to Al-Qaeda, and the 1993 World Trade Center bombers. He appears with Mr. Arnaut in a videotape obtained by the FBI. Other evidence ties Mr. Arnaut to Mamdou Salim and Mohammed Jamal Khalifa, two alleged Al-Qaeda leaders. By the way, Khalifa is one of the former brothers-in-law of Osama bin Laden and an individual who was alleged in the book Dollars for Terror to have been brought to the United States under the auspices of the petroleum faction of U.S. intelligence, which was utilizing Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden for its own geopolitical purposes. I believe that ultimately that same milieu, in turn, with a very, very powerful fifth column in the United States, then turned literally with a vengeance on the United States in a Pearl Harbor-style terrorist attack, and that the United States is not only at this point being subverted, rather like France in the pre-World War II and World War II periods, it is not only being subverted by a foreign power, but that entails the collaboration of a very powerful fifth column within the American political, economic, and national security establishments, and that we literally face a conquest by a hostile foreign power. Now, I suspect that the ultimate method of conquest will be economic, and I think we are now between the proverbial Iraq and a hard place. If we do not defend ourselves militarily and politically, then we will literally be physically destroyed. If we do defend ourselves, and if we do so unintelligently and spend tons of money on ridiculous weapon systems, including a missile shield, then we will be bankrupted economically. Oddly enough, I think the key to a successful defense of this country and its values will be the removal of George Bush and the Republican Party, particularly the negating of the Republican tax cuts, which will destroy the United States economically. It will destroy the United States by adding to an already unsustainable current accounts deficit. We face a future very much like that of Argentina if we don't. Nonetheless, as I've said in the past, I strongly support the war, although I think that George Bush and Al-Qaeda are part of the same milieu. That milieu is fascist. It is Islamo-fascist on the Al-Qaeda side and just plain fascist on the Bush side. More about Mr. Arnaut, this so-called philanthropist. This from the New York Times of Wednesday, May 1st of 2002. This is an article by Neil A. Lewis. This is Dateline, Washington, April 30th. And headline, Leader of Islamic Charity is accused of lying to court. Subtitled, U.S. says man spent money to Al-Qaeda. Skipping down. Speaking of Benevolence International, some of the information about the charity and Mr. Arnaut, according to the paper's file today, was also obtained in a March 19th raid of the foundation's offices in Bosnia. Investigators found guns and military manuals, as well as photos of bin Laden and of Mr. Arnaut, quote, handling rifles, a shoulder-fired rocket, and an anti-aircraft gun, unquote. That certainly sounds charitable to me. By the way, Mr. Hekmatyar, also associated with this milieu, is not only associated with the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, it's a very, very powerful drug dealer in the Afghan milieu. Now, in terms of understanding the Wahhabi lobby and the manipulation of American public opinion by the Wahhabi lobby slash Islamo-fascist milieu, bear in mind what Ahmed Huber, a protege of Johann von Leers, Goebbels' chief of anti-Semitic propaganda, bear in mind what he said about changing American public opinion in the United States. We're going to take a look now at the spin being put on the arrest of Mr. Arnaut and Benevolence International by the Council on American-Islamic Relations. That's an organization that we took a look at last week. We're going to review some information about that, taking a look not only at its connections to the Al-Qaeda milieu, but also its apparent connections to the Muslim Brotherhood as well. L.A. Times of Wednesday, May 1st of 2002, had the following article by Josh Meyer and Eric Lichtblau at Statelined, Washington. Its headline, Charity Leader Funded Terror, U.S. Alleges. And this deals with Benevolence International, Mr. Arnaut, etc. But listen to the spin being put on this particular individual and milieu. This appears to be characteristic, and it should be noted. Speaking of the crackdown on some of these Islamic charities which have been abused for the purposes of terrorism, according to numerous reports. It also infuriated Islamic leaders in the United States who said Arnaut's arrest fits a pattern of Justice Department harassment against Muslims since the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Quote, if you've got evidence of him having breakfast with Osama bin Laden, then charge him with terrorism, not perjury, said Ibrahim Hooper, a spokesman for the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Quote, bring the evidence into court and let him rebut it. Unquote. Well, there does appear to be a fair amount of evidence, judging from the press accounts. I would also note that with regard to counterintelligence, one doesn't necessarily allow spies and people connected with a military organization to examine all of the field intelligence. It's one of the things that makes this whole situation very dicey. In terms of successfully negotiating what is literally a military conflict, but which is being waged by irregulars and largely through intelligence and economic matters or means, one should say, other means, undermine one's constitutional foundation on the one hand, or one can simply be destroyed on the other. And depending on how successfully the U.S. can negotiate this, well, I think the future, quite simply the future of the society, will depend on that. And it may depend, too, on how willing Americans of all stripes, including Muslim Americans, are willing to tell the truth about institutions like the Council on American-Islamic Relations and also the Islamo-fascist slash Wahhabi slash Al-Qaeda connections to the Republican Party and the Bush administration, which could not be exaggerated in importance. Tuesday, April 30th of 2002, the San Francisco Chronicle had the following article. This is a Washington Post story by Dan Egan and Catherine Shaver. And this alluded to a number of incidents in which Saudi and/or Pakistani flyers were rerouted to other flights and taken off planes at the discretion of some of the pilots. This article is headlined, Incidents on Flights Cause Post-September 11th Jitters. And in one case, for example, three Saudi men who had no luggage were pulled off a flight, a Delta flight at Dulles Airport for questioning. And in other cases, a group of Pakistani musicians were rerouted on separate flights because the pilot did not feel comfortable with these individuals flying on their plane, in particular in light of recent alerts about terrorism and with the inflaming of the situation in the Middle East. But notice who acts as the spokesperson here for the American Islamic community and for the Islamic community in general. Skipping down on the story, Mohammed Nimer, N-I-M-E-R, research director for the Council on American-Islamic Relations, said most of the discrimination cases reported to the council involved, quote, outright prejudice, unquote. Again, quoting, there's no other way to put it, unquote, Nimer said. Some people are not comfortable flying in an airplane that has people of Middle Eastern Arab or Muslim backgrounds, unquote. Well, I think there are reasons why people in general would feel jittery about someone of that background. That is not necessarily bigotry, but it's just plain old-fashioned fear. And I don't think people necessarily should complain about that as discrimination. If you basically dismiss somebody from their job simply because they have an Islamic background, that could be viewed as discrimination. There do appear to have been some questionable uses of law enforcement by Attorney General John Ashcroft, which should come as no surprise, including to many of the Muslims who helped to elect George Bush. I'm afraid I don't feel a lot of sympathy. A lot of people were warning about the fascist nature of the Bush administration to come, and many of the elements associated with it. John Ashcroft is a domestic fascist and has a pretty overt background in that regard. But an awful lot of people, including the Ralph Nader forces, said there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. Well, you make your bed, and then you lie in it one way or another. We're going to turn now to an article which discusses some of the people involved with the Council on American-Islamic Relations. And I would note, again, the profound connections between the CAIR, the Islamo-fascist slash Wahhabi lobby, and the Bush administration. And last week, we took a look at the strong connections between this milieu and the milieu of al-Qaeda. There are at least four direct elements of intersection between the milieu that was targeted in the March 20th Operation Green Quest raids and the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, including a guy named Talat Atman, who delivered a benediction at the Republican convention. He also was a member of the board of directors of Harkin Energy, George W.'s one of his oil ventures, and a good friend of the Bush administration. Again, there's strong elements of overlap between al-Taqwa and the Bush administration, and as we've looked at, al-Taqwa would appear to be a direct extension of the underground Reich and an institution heavily involved in September 11th and other activities as well. More about al-Taqwa later. Now, note again the extent to which the Council on American-Islamic Relations has come to be a spokesperson for, or a mouthpiece, a PR organization for not only the American Islamic community, but the Islamic community around the world, and how it would appear to be couching very legitimate fears about terrorism and basically flacking for terrorist organizations, hiding in some cases successfully behind the rubric of civil rights. Following article is from the New Republic, and this can be accessed from the New Republic online from November 12th of 2001. The article is called Fevered Pitch by Franklin Foer, F-O-E-R, and it talks about the profound connections between the Wahhabi lobby and Islamofascism, as I call it, and the Republican Party, including the CAIR. Skipping down. The record of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CAIR, which, like the American Muslim Council, sends members to meetings organized by GOP operative Norquist and Safouri, is no more encouraging. When interviewed by Salon's Jake Tapper on September 26th, CAIR Communication Director Ibrahim Hooper, he's the individual who was flacking for Benevolence International, beginning again, when interviewed by Salon's Jake Tapper on September 26th, CAIR Communication Director Ibrahim Hooper refused to condemn Osama bin Laden. CAIR founder Nihad Awad, who appeared with George Bush at the Washington Islamic Center on September 26th, has argued that, quote, there is ample evidence indicating that both the Mossad and the Egyptian intelligence service played a role in the 1993 World Trade Center explosion, unquote. And Siraj Wahaj, who has served as a CAIR board member, has been described by federal prosecutor Mary Jo White as a possible conspirator in the 1993 bombing, parenthetically, of the World Trade Center. Next, I want to note that a number of Islamic scholars, and an example that we're going to look at in a minute, an imam of the Italian Muslim community, have complained vociferously and lamented the fact that CAIR is an organization that is coming to be able to speak in the name of the Muslim community. Continuing with the New Republic article. As Harvard professor of Islamic studies Ali Asani has complained, quote, there is general concern among Muslim intellectuals about how not only CAIR, but some of these other organizations are claiming to speak in the name of the Muslim community, and how they're coming to be recognized by the government as spokespeople for the Muslim community in the U.S., unquote. And still more about the CAIR. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from an internet site which is called the Root and Branch Association Limited. This is an Islam-Israel fellowship, and it basically has not only commentary but dialogue, including fielding online questions. The two co-chairpersons here are Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Muslim co-chairman, and Dr. Asher Adair, the Jewish co-chairman. Their website, www.rb.org.il/Islam. This article is called In Defense of Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes. Daniel Pipes, a former Reagan administration official, very conservative, but with some pretty intelligent things to say about Islamic terrorism. Stephen Emerson, a person for whom I have much more respect, is a person who, that's not to say I don't think Pipes, some of what he's had to say about the Middle East is worthwhile, is not an individual whose politics I generally agree with, but that's true of a lot of people these days. Stephen Emerson has done some very good work, including a sadly overlooked book called The American House of Saud, called The Secret Petrodollar Connection, which deals with some of the political implications of this recycled petroleum wealth. This article, In Defense of Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes, by Sheikh Professor Abdul Hadi Palazzi, the Secretary General of the Italian Muslim Association and an imam in the Italian Islamic community. And of the CAIR, he says, noting its connections with, among other institutions, the Muslim Brotherhood, Hisham Kabbani correctly identifies the origin of contemporary radicalism in Wahhabism. Kabbani correctly divides contemporary radicals into two groups, militants, unquote, those who directly engage in terrorism, and non-militants, unquote, those who indirectly support terrorism while maintaining a false respectability so that they can get invited to receptions at the White House, i.e. the wolves in sheep's clothing. I agree with Mr. Kabbani 100% on this issue. I would also add that the center of worldwide radicalism is a sect called the Muslim Brotherhood. This sect has sections engaged in direct terrorism such as Hamas, and sections not directly engaged in terrorism such as CAIR. Although their links to Hamas are clear, CAIR is permitted to act freely in the United States. CAIR claims to represent, unquote, the Muslim community and launches hate campaigns against journalists, senators, and others who interfere with their true terrorist agenda. Let us look at CAIR's carryings on during the past few years. I receive all of their press releases. And the article goes on to describe CAIR and some of what they have been up to. We're going to continue with this analysis on the other side of this program. Various broadcasts I've done available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Visit the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Detailed, annotated, and now reformatted descriptions of the programs on September 11th are available, and links to two WFMU-FM websites with the For the Record series on Real Audio. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 358, Mind Jihad, Part 6, Islamo-Fascism and the Wahhabi Lobby. This is being recorded on May 6th of 2002.